with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo.
All right, Kevin Miller in the morning, joined by an ever-optimistic Dave Pezzo. Kevin Miller with you here, and Dave Pezzo, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial, Pezzo on Facebook and Twitter, and coming to Snapchat, Instagram very soon. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Kevin.
You know, we take a look, usually we start with the big picture here. Let's start when we're taking a look at money locally. What's going on?
Well, Micron, the their stock is on fire. It's up like 70% in the last 6 months. If you can imagine, I mean, what a run they've had here. And yes, of course, they were at 35 at their peak. But, you know, this is a big move from 10 bucks a share to 17. And then on top of that, this past week, we got some more good news out of Intel. And that is that Intel said that computer sales were particularly strong. They pre-announced. What happens when you pre-announce is you say, before the quarter is, you know, before your normal quarterly announcement, they'll
right.
come out and pre-announce if they are expecting to be way better than expected or way worse than expected. Most pre-announcements, by the way, are to the downside. Is it, you know, everybody's wrong. Things aren't very good. This was an upside surprise mid-quarter and came out and said that, in particular, the reason we're so strong is because of computers, which that's DRAMs. That's Micron. That's their strength, and that's a big deal.
Well, it is, and hopefully that'll help out the local market as we continue. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a chance to catch up with Lieutenant Governor Brad Little over the weekend for our show Idaho Insights that airs here and some of our other stations. And we were talking about growth and managing growth. And he says, usually, you know, the state government does what they can, but that's up to the individual cities. And, you know, we talk about this once a month, it seems. It seems like we talk it every mm-hmm. week, but just the growth that is going on. How does this growth compare to what you saw in the boom years of, let's say, 05, 07?
Well, this is, to me, is more sustaining. It's not driven by liar loans. It's driven by cash. It's driven by people that want to be here. It's not driven because there's this hot market somewhere that people are all destined to run towards. It's not because we have a Tesla plant coming in or anything like that. You know, like our neighbor to the south, Reno's booming now because of Tesla moving in and some others. Those are one-trick ponies. Those are not as broad-based. So this is very different, Kevin. I am tickled with what's going on around here. Of course, we all are. It's just been this huge, consistent boom. And it's not that Idaho is in particular doing anything right except being Idaho, and that is the people here are nicer than they are anywhere in the world. The weather is better than anywhere in the world. And people have discovered that. It's just it's a great place to live and be. I always take this for granted, Kevin, until somebody comes, you know, a friend comes and stays with you for a while and they haven't been here before and you show them around and you just go, why don't I do this more often, you know? There's so many things to do, hiking the foothills, walking the Green Belt, all the parks. It's an amazing place, and I haven't even touched on all the nightlife we have here.
Nightlife?
Well, at restaurants, you know. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm sure there's some really cool hangouts for really late nighters. But late night for me would be actually, you know, like 10 o'clock at night.
I'm with you. So the quality of life bring people here. But on the other hand, you take a look at the infrastructure, and it's my concern. I said this to Brad Little, the idea that, you know, you have finite water. You have roads that perhaps can't keep up with demands. We see that now. Way yonder at Eagle Road all the mm-hmm. time. Now you have that mess going to 10 Mile and Meridian. You have incredible growth, but the idea of capping it or managing it effectively, it seems to be falling on the municipalities. So if you were the mayor of Meridian, if you were the mayor of Nampa, how would you handle the growth? Again, I see all this growth going on, and I'm just very concerned that we're not managing it well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier said than done. I mean, you have Chinden, you have all these roads that are, you know, two lanes, and they've been that yep. way forever, and they probably need to be expanded. We can't wave a magic wand unless we grab the magic Pezzo checkbook.
Right. And then suddenly the road is going to be six lanes.
Yes.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Yeah, I can see no downside in that. You know, it is one of those things that Kevin, it's a great problem to have, obviously, where people are moving here, moving to the communities. All the mayors look like heroes, whether they are or not. They all do. They're, you know, if there's cranes in the sky, the mayor gets the credit. If they're not, the mayor gets the blame. Right now, all the mayors look like they have a clear running for, you know, that they're going to continue to be elected as long as they want to be there, because everything continues to be strong. Kevin, it is an ongoing problem. Which roads do you do? How come we're still waiting on the, you know, the Emmett bypass or what have you? All these things, the north-south corridor that's always talked about and continues to be talked about is not here, which clogs up all of our north-south, right? It makes Eagle Road impossible. All of those things that people wish were in place aren't, and it takes a long time, and it's just always a catch-up. You think of big cities that have boomed, like Denver, you know, Atlanta. They get caught up, but you can't build a road hoping they'll come. You build a road when they come.
Right. That's a good point when you talk about the Emmett bypass. I mean, we have the Road to Nowhere where it goes from, you know, Emmett to, I believe, Chinden, and it should go to the highway, if you will.
Yeah, it goes to the not to Chinden. It goes to why can't I think? State Street.
State Street. But then they expanded that and it does go to Chinden.
It does.
I take that every day.
Well, okay. You live there. I will go with that. Okay.
Again, and the challenge, of course, is getting the federal matching funds to make that happen, and the feds will give you money for the new projects, but not so much for the old.
Right, yeah. Right. I know. And it is a very – and there's so many needs. I'm sure there's many communities around the country want to get their hands on the, quote, free money.
Dave Petzl joining us here, Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. So let's get back to some of our challenges. You fly a lot. That still is an issue here, our unique location and getting these flights in. I think we do have one nonstop back to Reno, your beloved Reno.
Right, Reno. We've got additional flights to Seattle, which is where my grandbaby is, so that's kind of super important to me. But they also, again, we're getting more and more flights. It's it's not nearly what it was a couple years ago, Kevin, when you and I talked about how big an issue this is for small business, medium-sized business to locate here. If you can't get to where your end markets are easily, it's very difficult.
It is, and that's just one of the challenges. Let's talk about the economy in general. People are back to work. It is the grind until Thanksgiving. Have we seen an increased activity in the markets?
Well, we have. The volatility appears to be back for sure. We went actually over 40 days without a 1% move in the market. Can you imagine that? 40 days without one single 1% move. That was the dullest summer or period of time I can ever remember. But it finally broke a week ago Friday. And we had a big move on Friday, and it's been literally every other day, up, down, up, down, up, down. Nothing too dramatic, but we are seeing some 1% moves. It's nothing like we had, let's say, in 08 and 09, where we had, you know, periodic 400, 500, 600, 700-point days. Nothing like that at all. Very contained, very calm. But we are seeing a good bit more volatility, to your point, Kevin. People are back off the beaches, they're back to work, and traders are moving the markets around. I think partly because the Fed is meeting this week. I think it's overdone, but if you're trading stocks on a daily basis, then stupid noise like, will the Fed raise a quarter of a point or won't they, and all the big machinations about it, you wind up in a circumstance where traders do trade around that type of information. Investors don't, but
right.
Traders do.
So let's continue on here at 580KIDO when we take a look at how healthy is the economy?
It's healthy, but it is. We do have some weak data that is out. There's no question it's healthy, but it's not as healthy as it should be, Kevin. We've got a government that's overreaching. We've got taxes that are too high. We've got, and we're just beginning to see the devastation of Obamacare. It's not just the poor health care. It's not just the high deductibles. It's also the fact that companies are leaving the business, and so premiums are skyrocketing. And businesses are now starting to have to pay for it.
Right. Well, what's the challenge, though, Dave, pardon the interruption, for those businesses like yours and others on the front lines of this when you have United saying we're going to get out? By the way, let me see. We'll just play it here right here. Ray, I'm just going to turn off my mic here for a minute, but I want to get your reaction to what the president said last week here at 580 KIDO.
Let's face it, Republicans don't like to hear good news right now. But it's important just to understand this is a big deal. More Americans are working, more have health insurance, incomes are rising, poverty is falling. And gas is $2 a gallon. Thank you for reminding me. Thanks, Obama.
You're not laughing.
No. Hey, the president gets the blame and the credit for whatever happens, but this president has done everything he can to destroy the economy, to make sure we don't have $2 gasoline. It's funny that he would even be bragging about that since he made sure that we didn't drill any wells. Best he could. But he couldn't stop private land. He couldn't stop technology. He couldn't stop people from this fracking revolution and the United States becoming the greatest provider, the biggest country of natural gas in the world. And we are going to be energy self-sufficient very shortly. We could be anytime. He tried to stop it with pipelines and everything else. As far as poverty, it's absurd and obscene that his party has controlled the inner cities for the last 50, 60, 70, 80 years. And inside those cities, we have more disruption with a black president than we have had in history. And on top of that, poverty is increasing. It's not decreasing. And the lack of hope inside these communities in the big cities, to me, is the biggest embarrassment that this president of this presidency. This was a presidency that we all defined, not just me. We all defined it as one of those amazing things where somebody of color could be the president of the United States. What an open country. What an amazing country. And that's exactly what we have. And to take advantage of that, he has not. And that is really, in my mind, would be, in my mind, a complete embarrassment. He could have done a lot of things there, a task force to address some of these problems. He's done nothing. I think he just likes to play golf, hang out on Air Force One, do some talk shows, and be like the cool president. But he's done nothing, and it's really a very sad thing because opportunity had really knocked, and he just fumbled it.
More coming up with Dave Pezzo next. You're listening to 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Dave Pezzo with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO, talking money. And this week, or last week, Apple came out with their i7.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a little rocky road for Apple. What does it mean to the consumer, you know, whether you have an i5, i6? I have a coworker here who was, I think he was either on Amazon or Apple, and trying to get the new i7 when it came out. He goes, oh, well, they messed up. It's not available for a couple more days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it that big of a deal?
Well, first of all, it's not available for a couple more days because they sold out, which was a big surprise to Wall Street, who hated the new iPhone. You know, so everybody was like, oh, it's not going to sell any. There aren't any new features. It's not fancy enough, and so on and so forth. Boom. They sold out. And so people are really wanting the new phone. There's a couple different dynamics at play here, Kevin. We've got Samsung falling all over themselves to cause huge problems. So this is the wrong time for Samsung to fall apart.
Well, and let's just remind everybody, their phone catches on fire. Well, not all of it, but less than 1%. And you know, you have people going, well, it's not a big deal. Well, we all want to make sure, and especially here in the West, because fires are such a prevalent part of our lives, unfortunately, you don't want to plug something in and there's a possibility that could catch on fire. Even the airlines say, don't plug it in on the planes.
I know. No, I was surprised because I flew here recently, and that's exactly what they said. And if you have a Samsung Galaxy or whatever, you must turn it off.
Wow.
FAA regulations are to turn it off, not airplane mode, off. So, no, this is not good news for Samsung at all, as they had become a very tough competitor to Apple.
But I'm sorry to interrupt, mm-hmm. but when you think of Samsung, they're a little bit more diversified than Apple. I mean, they do washers and dryers now.
Yeah.
They do refrigerators. They do TVs. And they do them very well.
They do. But the cell phone is the area where they have been a very good competitor to, and in fact, they're the number one in the world. So It's tough stuff. But there's a couple other positives with Apple. First of all, people do like Apple. I like my Apple. I like the fact that it updates itself. I don't have to pay for updates and all those things. And I realize Samsung does that too. But being in the Apple sphere, if you will, all my devices linked, all my devices have the same apps, all that stuff, all the pictures get downloaded, all of those things. I don't need a whole bunch of new fancy things to be excited about a new phone. I just did the 6 Plus here recently, so I'm not going to be changing over to 7. I don't care about all the, you know, little things. But it is amazing to me, Kevin, how many people go through and find one or two little things to just beat up on.
Isn't that marketing, though, Dave? Isn't that the idea that, well, your camera is good, but here is the bestest ever, ever, ever?
Absolutely. And if I had an iPhone 4 or 5, which a lot of people do, they're going to be upgrading. I would be upgrading, right? And that's what people miss.
Yeah.
There's going to be a huge number of people in the upgrade cycle, not just the new buyers. Like, what's going to happen in China and so on and so forth? Well, a few people will buy. But on top of that, as we get a few years down the road, those people are going to upgrade to the iPhone 8 or 9 or whatever it is. So we do have this inborn millions and millions, tens of millions of people that are – their phones are getting old, and they don't want to leave Apple. They're not considering anyone else, and now it's time with the 7 to go ahead and upgrade.
So let's talk a little bit about some of these other stories, and we might want to try and get you into some controversy. Ford shifting all-American small car production to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And that's bad, that's good. Of course it's bad, but for the people there, but it again shows how horribly difficult it is in some states to do business. Now, the South has reacted very positively to opening up and having low taxes and good labor rules, and they have dominated any new construction for automobiles. But it still is so much cheaper to do something in Mexico, and it's clean, it's safe, and all those things. So it is, it's a sad thing, but it's going to continue to happen. If these states are overbearing and these unions are overbearing, it just you force companies to make these terrible decisions.
By the way, I recommend this book. It came out about 10 years ago, The End of Detroit, where it really talks about the Toyota way, the Honda way, and how Ford at one time had the best-selling car in America and in the world, the Taurus, and how they let the Taurus just slide. Now, not to beat up too much on the American car manufacturers, Ford, the only one that didn't take the Obamacare bailout. And there are legacy costs. In the South, you don't have many older employees, and you don't have the massive benefits that you do with the UAW and others.
You don't. And it's not, again, it's one of those things that we have to react as a society to the change that people are living a long time, that they're going to need health care provided for decades, not a few years in retirement, that they need to have pensions that last decades, not a few years into retirement, that these have incredible costs, and adjustments need to be made. And when people just simply say, I'm here with the union, and I'm here not to negotiate with you, I'm not here to change anything, I'm here to get everything we can, then the only answer you have as a company is that then we have to be competitive, go manufacture somewhere else. If people don't step up and do a better job, you can't simply say, it's all for me, and I have no, and I don't care what you want or need on the other side of the table. It has to be an honest negotiation, and that's been missing in any of these union deals.
Well, and that is the challenge on both sides, I would argue.
Yeah, agreed. There's always going to be two sides to it, but the reality is these companies that have gotten away from unions, the employees seem to be doing fine, they seem to be happy, and they are thriving. And all through the South, this is a thriving situation. All through the Midwest, it's still in decline. The automobile selling all over the world is still declining in the Rust Belt, and that is union-based.
Well, then, did Ford make a mistake by going to Mexico and not to, say, Louisiana?
In my opinion, yes, but that's their choice, and I'm sure they thought a lot about it, and I'm quite positive that they have plants, facilities down there, so they just chose not to and chose to open up another one.
Have we come so far that buying an American car made in America doesn't matter so much? I mean, people give me a hard time for, you know, driving my Toyota or my Subaru. Some of them are made in America, some of them are not, but will that translate to a company like Ford? And what I think about are the people on the front lines, the people that work at the dealerships. When, and you remember this, cash for clunkers, I felt bad for the people that were selling cars.
Yeah.
For the dealerships. There are a lot of dealerships that went under that, you know, may or may not have been reported as much as, I mean, dealerships that, you know, contribute to charitable works, dealerships that sponsor the hometown baseball team,
absolutely,
that sponsor little leagues, that just went away.
Yep.
So if you're selling Fords, is that going to be a challenge, do you think, or do you think that we're in this millennial-led world where it doesn't really matter?
No, I do think it matters, Kevin, and I think that's an interesting dynamic that we have here between the Internet and local. It's a very interesting thing where we see a company like Tesla, which is very millennial, if you will, in today's world, right? You order your car online and things like that.
Right.
And they don't want to have a dealership. So there are no local people. And then up against that, you have all these local stores like this saying, hey, you can't do that. That just bypasses us. So there is this real tug of war going on, Kevin, where we do. But I still see lots of local coming. I talk about it all the time, right? I like to go get my shoes and get them cheaper anywhere else, but I like to go to Shoes Running Company because that is they know what they're doing. They help me find the right pair of shoes. And
a crazy shoe in a good way. He's always out there.
Yeah, he is always out there. And he's always out there sponsoring everything.
Yep,
who doesn't want to help to buy from that, to be local in that way?
Yeah, but let me hit you with one more point, then we've got to run here at 580K Audio. You take a look at GM. Part of their bailout is they wanted to say that they were building cars in America, and they're building factories in China.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'll tell you why they're building some of them over there.
Well, I get it to a degree. However,
yeah,
you know, let's go back to the very essence of the Industrial Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
What made America great again and again were, you know, Henry Ford and these guys. And now we're going to Xingzhou.
We are, and we are. We're going to keep doing that. First of all, you don't want to build a car and then ship it all the way across, you know, and that's because they sell a lot of cars over there, Kevin, and it is better to not have to ship it quite as far. But the point is still very valid. If we are going to continue to be the highest taxed nation in the world, corporate tax-wise, you know, if we want to go ahead and talk some more about what Obama has not done, that's a simple one. There are clearly plenty of people on both sides of the aisle that want to do some corporate tax reform, but without the president behind it, it will not happen. And so that I'm looking forward to in a big change. But if you don't see any change there, why would a manufacturing base move back to America, where it is taxed at the highest level possible?
To be continued, Dave Pezzo, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Kevin.
You're listening to 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO, that's our phone number. I'd love to hear from you. Of course, this is the live segment, the next hour and a half, and I am looking forward to it. You know, it is, it's amazing how easy it is when we are looking at the news to know and to intellectualize how and what's going to happen. And, I've talked about this a little bit before, but I think it's really, really worth bringing up periodically and to think about. And I'm not sure why it is, but here's what it is. When you're bearish, meaning you think the market's going to go down for any number of reasons, because there's always a good number of reasons why things won't work, then somehow that's an intellectually superior argument to anything that the bulls case have, right? I mean, if you're bullish, you're permeable. Yeah, you don't really think about things. You just go, yeah, it'll be okay. It's just long term. You never really worry about things, which is not true. I've never met a quote perma bear or perma bull that wasn't concerned about some things. But you see, when you're a perma bear, it's like it's okay. It's okay to be wrong all the time. I mean, all the people leading into this particular Fed meeting when we were pretty sure interest rates are going to be raised. And if not, at least the language is going to be so harsh, you know. And the Fed didn't, and that's okay because they were wrong, and they were short stocks, and they told you to stay out, and it would be volatile, and don't get in, like they do all the time, over and over, over and over, over and over. But gosh, I really want to know what all these guys are saying all the time. Why? What? Why? You know, why is it okay to be like a perma bear? It's intellectually soft to be a perma bull. But being a perma bear and being permanently wrong, but that's intellectually defendable. Because after all, I've got all my literature and piles and stacks of what's wrong in the world. So I'm right. You know, I'm really right. Just maybe I'm early. Maybe you know, the end of the world has been postponed yet again, but I'll be right. I'll be right. And this goes on and on, decade after decade. You know, finally they fade away, they die, whatever. And then new ones pop up. Because being a fear monger, it works. It works selling stuff. You know, Peter Schiff is still doing okay. Even though if you followed any of his advice, you've been killed, just absolutely killed. But it's okay, you know, because the world's ending. And I've got my little book of disaster of the day and my little thing over here, and I still get lots of interviews. Subscribe to my newsletter. And it's really kind of nutty. It's really kind of nutty. But as we kind of look at just the last few years here, and it's been... Actually, what, like 7.5 years now? 7 years since the big panic. 7 years. But, you know, you stop, you think about from these folks what we've heard for 7 years. You know, and those people out there, you know, like me, that aren't really deep thinkers that, you know, just kind of think, you know, it'll be okay. You know, history has said we'll come out of this recession. We're going to come out of this problem, the deficit issue. We're going to come through that because businesses find a way to evolve. Yeah, that's not intellectually thinking. And you get put in a box, and that's okay. It's all right. It's called the box of money, okay? Because those people that have been thinking it'd be okay have been really right. Forever. What we forget is that the market does normal. What's normal? Once per year, the market goes down 10%. Now, it doesn't mean it can't do it twice. It doesn't mean it has to do it for sure. It might be zero. But on average, about once a year, market goes down 10% or more. Now, if that happens once a year, what would you call that? Yeah, in my mind, I'm looking for some big word here. I'm just going to call it normal. Normal. Market's correct. Is normal. About every 3 years, the market has a 20% or more correction. In the midst of the fact that the market's up 75% of the years, 90% of the 5-year periods, and so on. Long-term time frames, the market's always higher. Who gets the press? What gets the press? The perma bear. Feel like it's Eeyore. It's like this is a weird world where Eeyore always gets the press. You know, it's like, you know, Tigger. And we're going to go flash on over to Tigger here. Yeah, these things are going to be okay, and my life is pretty good, and it's really abundant. And, it's just amazing how much stuff we have. Bing, 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 bing. Yeah, that's Tigger. Yeah, thanks, Tigger. Tigger, just shut up, Tigger. Tigger, shut up. Now, let's run on over and talk to Eeyore.
Oh, yeah, I'm really worried about Brexit. I was worried about Greece. I'm worried about all the mortgages when they reset. You know, municipal bonds, the whole thing's going to cave in. Wow, thank you so much. You are so smart, Eeyore. You're so smart. Because you can really rehearse and regurgitate all the really bad headline news. Well, I do have a degree from the Chicago School of Business. Wow. How easily we dismiss the fact that they're wrong. Remember all the adjustable rate mortgages that were going to reset? Shortly after the 2008 panic, yeah, things are okay in 09. It's getting better out there. It's getting better in the markets. It wasn't getting better economically. Not for a long time. But then it was going to be, yeah, those stupid idiots buying into stocks, they're going to get crushed when we reset the mortgages. And we go have a double dip recession. And then, of course, we have got to really scare people about the municipal bond crisis that's coming. Remember that? The 60 Minutes thing? I can't even think of her name now. She's kind of gone, isn't she? But people were panicked about the inevitable collapse of the municipal bond market. And we had to have hyperinflation after QE. Had to have hyperinflation. Couldn't invest in stocks then. And those fools that told people to invest in stocks obviously didn't understand the certainty of hyperinflation. The fiscal cliff. Sequester. What about the federal government shutdown? That's it. It's over, man. And remember when oil prices spiked and that was the end of it, man, we were going to $200 a barrel in oil. It was at $150 and it was over. Wait a minute. Yeah, it was higher oil. That's right. And then when oil prices went down, that was panic. Yeah, it was. So if oil prices are going up, that's bad. And if oil prices are going down, that's bad. Yeah, it is. It is to Eeyore, because all things, all times, everywhere are all bad. Always. Especially if we're trying to sell an equity-indexed annuity, a packaged product to people. We got to scare them to death. Especially if we're selling our newsletter. We're pimping gold. We've got to really scare people. So it's higher oil prices bad, lower oil prices are bad, higher anything, lower anything. It's all bad everywhere all the time. And we went through the Greek crisis in 10, 11, 12, and 13. I know it's been resolved. We can't remember that it was four times, actually five, because we had to do it twice one year. The European Union is going to break up. And then we have Brexit. That was an enormous two-day issue. 2 days. I don't know about you, but I would never want to own stocks if I had to tolerate two bad days in a year. No way. Crazy, isn't it? So what are they telling you now? P.E. ratios are too high. I don't know if that's part 10 or 12, because they've been just too high for many thousands of points. Corporate profits are receding. They did. I'm not sure with some of the recent reports that they aren't all reaccelerating. But let's go with whatever their fear is. The election shouldn't we step aside? Shouldn't we have stepped aside for any one of these things? All of these things? Well, what about coming back after fill in the blank? But right now it's the election. Okay. Aren't we due for a correction? Yeah. Back to what we said before, it's normal. It's normal. Why, oh why, do we insist on trying to time normal? Nobody can do it. Why do we want to freak out about normal? What's the matter with us? What is the matter with us that we take this perfectly great thing, the opportunity to invest in businesses that have been successful, that look like they might continue to be successful? We don't think they will, then you pass on them. Available any business day. Earns more than anything else. Has a better growth of income, income only, not capital appreciation, just income, than anything else on the planet. Has for your whole life. And somehow mutate that beautiful thought process into doom and gloom and forecasts that you can't make. What's the matter with us? Do we really want to be irrational? Do we really want deep down to get this wrong? Sometimes I wonder, don't you? We really do a lot of things to fuss ourselves. A lot of things to fuss ourselves when we don't really need to be. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Please do give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to talk with people today. Broncos Saturday. Big game, Oregon State. That will be fabulous this afternoon. But right now, we're talking money. We're talking psychology. Please do give us a call. Shoot us an email, dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO, that's our number. Hey, our email is dave@petsofinancial.net. Let's go ahead and go to the phones. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. What's happening?
Morning. Hey, it's a Bronco day, and it's, after yesterday's wind, beautiful morning. Gorgeous.
Yep. Well, last week we had a lively debate. And I was particularly interested when you said you considered me your straight man, that I was making your point. Uh-huh. All the while, you were making my point. But
let's not argue about who the straight man is, okay?
No, that was nothing compared to the later call you had. By the way, have you invested yet in Bitcoin?
You're right. I forgot all about that call. That was rather interesting. Yeah.
I think it was the same one as previously. And, man, I mean, his thing is Bitcoin.
Yeah, I know. It is. No, I've not invested in Bitcoin, but I do find it all, the whole thing, fascinating. But that blockchain technology is undoubtedly going to be a game changer for finance companies and all of us.
Well, whatever the hell that is, I mean, that makes...
Yeah, I don't know what it is. They just call it blockchain, but it's very, very secure. It really helps quicken the pace of financial transactions, things like that. It's going to alleviate the middleman on a lot of financial transactions. Should be very interesting.
Makes gold and silver sound good.
Well,
you say it's an actual feasible something?
Oh, yeah. No, the technology is called blockchain, and that's what everybody is working on. And all it is, look, I can't really
I'm not a software guy. What I'm saying is that this is going to have a major impact on how we transact, make financial transactions in the future, and that people will be able to do them more directly rather than relying only on, you know, say, Citicorp to do your transaction, and they take a little cut. So it will cheapen a lot of our transactions. But you know, penny here and there adds up to a lot of money.
But it'll still be based on value, assets, and all that.
Absolutely, and that fiat currency and all that stuff, yeah.
So, interesting.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, anyway, have a great, you know, I hope you get some more calls.
We will. I've got to see somebody coming right up there, and I appreciate you. But we will, undoubtedly. And I just have a good feeling about today. I really do. I just saw a longtime buddy of mine. We haven't visited in a long time, passing through, and just, you know, kid you grew up with. Those are, I don't know, they're just, yeah, I feel great about today.
Well, you know, when you get up in age, you know, it's the old thing about you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
And when you get older, and I'm realizing also, you know, all these people you didn't know were friends, you know, in high school and later are coming out of the woodwork, and it's good, you know.
It is good. It is good. Everybody goes about living their lives, and then sometimes you just have those people that you reconnect with, and it's very special. And it is special. There's no question.
Yeah, I mean, they're the only people that can identify with what you've been through.
Well, to a degree, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. That's absolutely true. Jim, thank you, sir.
Take care.
Have a great day. Bye-bye. And you know what? Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. We've just got a couple seconds left here. We're going to swing right into hour number two, and we're going to dive right in. If you all want to talk, call, we'll just do that. Other than my usual monologue. We'll talk to you here right after Fox News. Hello, welcome, and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. We're here to share. We're here to grow together. We're not here to figure out what you're supposed to be buying and selling, because the reality is you should be buying the great corporations of the world constantly, for all of your life, and have a growing stream of income that is enriched like nothing else for your entire life, your grandparents' lives, always. There's just so much noise out there. So much noise. We just get caught up and, you know, should I buy gold and silver? And then, I mean, we come up with new things like a Bitcoin or what have you. You know, a few years ago, people were trading oil. They really were. That was the way to do it. And then options kind of came along. And then there was the option game. And then everybody needed to own real estate and these levered deals that gave you great tax breaks. It even got into cattle feeding. Did. Horse racing. Yeah, absolutely. All about tax things, right? And then we had single premium life insurance that was a great tax break that, of course, was shut down. They all were shut down, or they were just bad investments in the first place. Always this search for something and missing the basic premise of what markets are. Buying businesses of great corporations. And you're free to trade. Unfortunately. Making for short-term decisions for many. So we're not here to tell you what to buy and sell. That's absolute nonsense. And it's, in fact, it's so far from the truth of good investing. We shouldn't even be listening to. And I mean, ever. Never, ever, never, ever, ever, ever. Never. It's crazy. In a world where markets do normal things like they correct from time to time, we seem to overreact every time. And even when we have conversations, serious, deadly serious conversations about not timing the market, I can't do it. I know,
Peter Lynch and Michael Price, John Templeton, Warren Buffett say you can't time the market. But, you know, what do you think about sitting out till the election's done? What do you think about waiting until QE? What about this Greek thing? You know, I'm not trying to time the market. You know, just like, you know, just not. But, yeah, I suppose I am. Right? It's hard. It's hard, and we kid ourselves about it because we think we're right about these things. And let me give you an example. So let's say you think that the market's going to go down right now. Okay? So I'm going to pull out just for a little bit right now. Right now. Right now. Boom. You're right. We got a 5, 10% correction. Whew. I am a smart guy. And we forget now, first of all, that we've been saying, well, since Greek crisis number 1, 2, 3, and 4, I probably want to sit out right now. But let's say we didn't do anything about it. Thank goodness. It doesn't mean you were right. It means you just didn't act on what you wanted to do. And you were really worried about the municipal debt crisis. And you were really, really, really worried about high oil prices and then low oil prices. Now the presidential election. And so let's suppose we have a correction. And you would have been right to sit it out. Now, does it mean you were right to sit it out because you're right this time like a stopped watch? You've been wrong the prior 10 thoughts about getting out. And you didn't do anything, thank goodness. Doesn't make you right. I mean, if you keep guessing, you're going to be right once in a while. But here's the hardest, worst part. When do you get back in? I mean, if it's down 5, you know it's going to go down 10. The world's telling you that, and the news is bad. If it's down 10, you know it's going to go down 15 or 20 because it's that bad, and the world tells you it's that bad. I mean, do you trigger it? What do you do? You know, when it falls, and then I'll, like, you know, get back in. When? Don't tell me you're going to get back in. When are you going to get back in? Very specifically. Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, no, it's the same thing. It's like there's going to be a bell rung for you. You know, in your prayer life, you're gonna, like, God's going to go, Dave, now's the time. Markets are about to go higher. Thank you, Lord. That doesn't happen. So now you don't just have to get it right once. You have to get it right twice because, you know, you're not going to want to leave the greatest game that's ever been played that creates the most wealth ever in the history of the world. You're not going to want to leave that permanently. And we play this game. And this game is wrapped up in all kinds of things. I need to buy gold because, you know, it's fiat currency, and the world's coming to an end. There's going to be hyperinflation. They're always degrading the dollar and blah, blah, blah. It just goes on and on. And we continue to hide behind the headline news instead of recognizing the simple truth of what stocks are. They represent ownership of the great corporations of the world. Not a piece of paper. Not this weird game. There's not this thing you have to get in and out of. Time, move, zigzag. You don't have to know what currency fluctuations are. You don't have to know that stuff. You don't have to know what the European Union's going to do. You don't have to know the outcome of Brexit, the Greek crisis, what's going to happen to Europe, what's going to happen with terrorism, what's going to happen if we have the liar as a president. What happens if we have Trump? What about corporate profits? What about when QE, whatever, oh yeah, it already ended, never mind, but what happens when, fill in the blank, read the newspaper, there's the next thing. You don't have to know that stuff to buy and own the great corporations of the world.
This is a game of you controlling you, controlling your inputs. It's not about how much stuff you know. Because the more stuff that some people know, the more weird stuff that they want to go buy. Oh, hedge. Get involved in it. Because it's all going to be better. They go into this chase. It's the same, you know, it's really weird. But, gosh, this soap company over here has raised its dividend for 60 years in a row by 3 times the rate of inflation. I wonder if that's a good investment. In spite of all the stuff that's happened 60 years, the last 60 years. Soap company. Well, you know, really to do well in the market, you know, you got to get these IPOs. You got to catch like Google on the IPO. I didn't. But I'm up like 500 or 600% on it. Yeah, I mean, you needed to get Apple, you know, like when they were practically bankrupt. Actually, no, you didn't. No. In fact, you could have waited until they started paying a dividend. You're doing great. Well, no, you didn't have to catch Microsoft at the IPO. You don't. Great corporations. Cash flow machines. We overthink it. Our number is 580-543-6580-KIDL. I'm hoping that the rest of today we just take a whole massive amount of questions, and I've got some email questions, so bring us up. And right now it's Bitcoin Bernie. I wonder what we're going to talk about, Bernie.
No, it sounded like you guys had the questions more than anything, sir. I don't know that we got some of input last week. I don't know that Bitcoin is just all about a doom and gloom replace just the dollar. I think it's the chance of the internet being born, the internet of money, so to speak.
Okay.
You know, when you say blockchain technology, everybody's working on that. Sure, some of the financial bigger banks, they seem to think they can separate the blockchain from Bitcoin or what have you. But what it really comes down to is there's room for improvement on many things in this world, and Bitcoin just happens to be one of those. Again, more than anything, the caller that called earlier sounded like he had some questions, and it sounded like you didn't have the answers, so that's why I was calling.
Well, go right ahead. We've got a couple minutes till our next break. What would you like to tell us?
Well, more than anything, again, I'm here to answer the questions. You say the blockchain is going to change the world, and you know, in many ways, I think that it has that opportunity. Other than that, again, you guys seem to knock it, but you don't ask the questions. So I think last week you said it was backed by air. And I guess I would dispel that truth.
Okay. Anyway, all right. What is the intrinsic backer of Bitcoin, then? If it's
computing power and electricity cycle.
Electricity. You're saying electricity backs Bitcoin.
Essentially, computing power and electricity, because the whole thing with mining, you're going to find most mining comes from places that have cheaper electricity. That's what's going to be the determining cost.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time following how that's an intrinsic value, is that the electricity determines the backing or the value of Bitcoin.
So you're telling me that you have a hard time understanding how, like, Idaho Power, when they represent electricity, that's all that their business is. Electricity is a commodity. And so what really happens is you have data centers in places with cheap electricity where these people set up computers, and their only job is to... They call it mining, which I don't think is a good explanatory word. I think more an idea would be weavers. All these people do is process transactions. That's all they're doing. That's the whole job of a miner, is to process transactions in hope of a reward of Bitcoin for doing the work.
Okay. And again, I do not understand how this is beneficial to mankind. To have people, as you call them, did you call them beavers? Is that what you said?
weavers, as in weaving, like weaving.
Oh, weeders.
Weave basket makers, how they weave.
Okay. So they're going through and they're just processing transactions that don't really exist. I mean, there's not really, it's not like they're not like working for Citicorp and saying, let's take $1,000 out of Dave Petzo's account and put it over here to pay off a mortgage payment or whatever. They're not processing anything. They're just processing numbers.
No, 100% they are doing what you just suggested. You can have a Bitcoin debit card in your wallet. I can go and buy a cup of coffee, and all I'm going to do is give the equivalent in Bitcoin. And all it has to do, it just has to make it through the network, which is transacted through the miners, and then that post is processed. You can pay for your DirecTV. There's almost, you can buy anything off of Amazon with Bitcoin. So you keep on alluding to these not real transactions, but sure, I assure you, they're very real.
Okay, but that's how you mine. So if I buy something, I might get a magic Bitcoin?
You might get what? I'm sorry?
I might get a Bitcoin? I mean, by the somebody processing a transaction on Bitcoin, they might be rewarded with a Bitcoin. Was it like every million transactions, a Bitcoin pops out?
No, sir.
That's what I thought. What you're saying are two different things. These are not people that are processing.
No.
They're not people that are processing the transaction itself. They're just mining for it. They're doing transactions to go find Bitcoins on the Internet, correct?
No, sir. They don't find anything. There's an algorithm, much like many algorithms that are out there, that have a certain purpose. Now, every 10 minutes, Bitcoins are generated onto the network. And whoever the miner is that solves the block, which the algorithm says every 10 minutes, on average, you'll solve a block, somebody is rewarded for doing the work of processing transactions.
Okay.
That's right now, 12 and a half Bitcoins are brought into the world on average every 10 minutes.
Okay. That's
simple.
Great. Okay. I still don't understand the intrinsic value or how electricity is the backing item. But, Bernie, I appreciate it. I've got to take a break, and I appreciate your phone call.
Does Visa have intrinsic value?
It's what? I'm sorry.
Does Visa have intrinsic value? What is their sole purpose?
Visa, to take transactions and monitor them, and the value that they have is the profits they make. If they don't make any profits, Bernie, there is no intrinsic value. Thank you for your call today, Bernie. Our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Ring us up. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. And also, if you prefer, email Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. I'll get to some emails here a little bit later, but let's go to Frank. Frank, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Dave. I want to compliment you on your great patience.
No, that's kind of you. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm not going to talk about Bitcoins. But anyway.
You would not have been allowed on if you were.
Okay.
We've had enough of the Bitcoin for right now. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, my question is how do you distribute your asset allocation between a taxable account and a tax-deferred account such as a 401k, which will soon be an IRA? Let me just ask the specific question then. That's the background.
Mm-hmm.
The specific question is I have heard that it's best to treat – your entire accounts as one account and put the tax-efficient holdings in the taxable and try to put the tax-inefficient holdings, such as bonds,
mm-hmm.
in the tax-deferred account. The problem I have with that myself is that leaves my taxable taxable investing account without any bonds, so the gyrations of the stock market seem to be much more evident and obvious in this taxable account versus the other account. Does that make sense?
It does. It totally does, you know, Frank. Yeah.
And I guess the basic question is it okay to put bonds in a taxable account? I guess a long-winded question comes to that.
And besides, you could also make them tax efficient, too, by using municipal bonds if that's what you chose to do, right? Okay?
Yes.
So you could solve that puzzle there, too.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're in a lower tax bracket, are you losing out on some gains?
Well, you are. That's a good point. But also then let's go back to what the point is, which is tax efficiency. If you're in a lower tax bracket, we're far less worried about tax efficiency, aren't we?
That's right.
Okay, because the penalty's not that big. So if you are in a lower tax bracket, number one, let me start at the basic beginning of this. And I think much more is talked about with this than is necessary for most all people.
Sure.
Okay. So tax efficiency in this way or that way, there really are certain things, okay? You don't want to have things like MLPs, master limited partnerships, things like that. You really don't want those in taxable accounts because there's extra reporting to be done, and it can get messy, okay? So putting them in IRAs makes a lot more sense, right?
Uh-huh.
So there's little things like that. But when it comes right down to it, the bigger concern for me from an asset allocation perspective on your qualified and non-qualified, meaning, you know, in normal words, taxed, already pre-taxed or hasn't been taxed money yet, then we want to be thinking about, for most people, I want to have a balance of both. We all want a certain amount of money, but let's say it's my retirement goal is $1.5 million. So if I have $1.5 million, I can retire. And then you have it all in an IRA. You don't have the flexibility I'd like for large purchases because anytime you take an extra chunk of money out, it's going to really jump your tax bracket. So that kind of flexibility to me is more important than the type of asset that's in each of the accounts. But I want to make sure you're allocated between taxable and non-taxable, not so much getting down into the weeds of I can't own any bonds in my non-qualified portfolio. You know what? You can. You absolutely can.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
That's just crazy talk to think that. And so as we kind of look at that and then say, but how much money is in your non-qualified account versus your qualified account versus your non-qualified account, those are the bigger weights in thinking through the process of how to allocate your assets to me. Now, when we take that a step further, it's okay because you're looking at it on a non-qualified account. If that's your big account and you're saying, I really can't have any bonds there because I'm not supposed to for tax efficiency, I would say nonsense. Quit worrying about that. If that's the bulk of your asset, you go ahead and you appropriately allocate, okay, on your whole portfolio. You don't need your IRA to have 100% bonds just to make up for the fact that your non-qualified has none. But if you choose to do that, I agree with that statement, okay? But
sure.
My concern then is if you're pulling money in retirement is not to be thinking about, all of my money in the account that I'm taking has to be stocks. And so even when the market goes down, I'm going to be selling those off. Well, you better put some bonds in the portfolio then, okay, or cash, something, okay, that is going
right.
to give you some ballast because you're right now, for tax reasons, I'm assuming, when I pull money out, I'm going to be pulling it out of just this account right now, not my whole portfolio. So if the market tanks, I need to have something that I can be eating off of while I wait for the inevitable recovery on the rest of the portfolio. Because selling stocks down is a disaster, right?
Oh, yes, sure.
So to me, don't overthink it. You go ahead and balance your portfolio, but it depends on where you're pulling money from, what your balance is between qualified and non-qualified, so you have good balance. I don't mean your asset allocation. I mean how much money you have there. And then you do need to create reservoirs, which is what you were concerned about before, or saying, I don't feel comfortable having no bonds or whatever. Yeah, I am comfortable not holding bonds right now, but they would be floating rate notes and things like that. They're kind of like bonds, but I don't want to own 1.6 10-year treasuries either, okay? So we don't have them, qualified or not. But to answer your question generally and in normal conditions, you need a reservoir to pull money from whatever asset you are pulling your income from. If that's non-qualified, then own the stinking bonds and don't worry about some kind of, well, they're not as efficient if they're over here as efficient over here. Forget about it. You need to set up yours based on your needs, not because of what I think we're really doing is really getting down into the weeds here. It's correct to think that way, but don't overdo it. Okay?
Okay, yeah. That sounds great.
Good.
Good.
Frank?
Good. And I have just one more comment.
All right.
If that's okay.
Yes, sir.
Concerning doomsdayers and gold and Bitcoin people,
uh-huh.
that if the market tanks completely, you know, goes down to zero, you know, an egg-laying hen is going to be worth much more than its weight in gold or any accumulation of Bitcoins that you might have.
I know people think I was just making a joke or being vulgar in some way, but we're back to chickens and women. We'll be trading chickens, women's, and camel. Not women's, women and camels. I mean, it's just if we have no currency, we have no system, then you're absolutely right. I hope you have some stuff to eat.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's true. But I appreciate your show and the education you provide. I appreciate that a lot.
Frank, thank you. Thank you very much for your comments. I appreciate that. Thanks.
You bet. All right.
Thanks for the call. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436. That's 580-KIDO. Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Hey, the board's clear. Ring us up. We're going to take a break for Fox News, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. Love to hear from you. We have a couple emails here I'll read through here in a second, but please do get bringing up those phones. I know we had some callers earlier and looking for your returned calls in this hour. We'd love to visit with you. All right, Robert writes, Dave, thank you for sharing your knowledge. Please discuss pros and cons of a reverse stock split. Robert, we did touch on this, but let me go ahead and hit it briefly. I think we answered it last week, but must have missed it. So let me. It's easy. Pros and cons. Normally, reverse stock splits. We think of a stock split this way: the stock went up to $100. Disney stock went up to $100, and we're going to do a 2-for-1 split. That's a normal split. Then the next day, the stock's selling at 50, and you have twice as many shares. Nothing's changed. The exact same market cap for the company as before. Now, reverse is, in fact, what you would think. That's the reverse. Now, you would never take a $100 stock and reverse stock split it to $200. But when stocks are tanking and they're falling below $10, below $5 in particular, or $3, what happens is that many, many, many institutions cannot and will not own a stock that is priced that low. So companies will reverse stock split. So if you have a $2 stock, they might do a 10-for-1 reverse split and take that stock to $20 and take away 90% of your shares. So what happens is you still wind up in the same place, but for different reasons. One company is doing well, stock's rising, and they split. One stock is doing, or company is doing horribly. The stock is cratering, collapsing. And so they artificially raise the price of the stock. So as far as pros and cons, obviously you're buying a company that does a reverse stock split. You're buying a company that's been a disaster. I don't know if they're going to turn it around. But let's just say this. Reverse stock splits rarely save a company from extinction. Not never. It can.
But it's the fundamentals that matter, not whether you're splitting the stock or reverse splitting. It's just that I'm saying leading up to that, the only reason to be doing a reverse stock split is because that company has stunk. Stunk. Thanks for the question. All right, let's go to another one here. Roy writes, Dave, I'm 66 now, and I need to replace some of my individual stocks with something more stable. Would you recommend income-producing small, medium, or large-cap funds, bond funds, other? Okay, great question. Now, first of all, I want to ask the question. We have to think of this back to, for example, from a tax perspective. As we're talking about, we want to take and replace some of the individual stocks. Hey, if they're in a qualified program like an IRA, that's fine. There's no tax consequences. But if they are up substantially in value, do we really want to swing out of something like that and take a big tax hit? I would question that. I would ask, why do we? And then the second part is, if they're high-quality companies and you have done your homework, why do you really want to not hold them? Now, we want more stability. I get that. So let's talk about the second part. But let's evaluate it from a tax perspective as well before we immediately say, I want something, quotes, more stable. Because if you're also talking about an individual company that has a dividend, hopefully a rising dividend, then we're talking about a company that I don't care what the price is. I care what the value is. And the value is what I receive. So you're implying you're 66 and you want more stability. 66 says I want more stability because I'm probably drawing income or I'm nearing that point. Okay? I'm just going to take that as part of this. So if I have a rising stream of income from this, why would I care if the stock price drops from 50 to 45, which is a substantial 10% drop? It doesn't sound very substantial, kind of insignificant. Why would I care if it went from 50 to 55 if I'm just pulling the income to live off of? And the answer is we shouldn't. We wouldn't. With any other type of property under the sun, we would never do that. We wouldn't say, wow, my building just went down in afternoon trading because the Fed got together and did something that the market said wasn't good. I wonder if I should sell my building. Nobody does that. Nobody ever thinks like that. Like, wow, I should go get my building appraised after the news I read today. Nobody does that. We only look at it as the cash flow. We only think about that when we go buy a real business, a business that we own all of, right? I don't care if they make milkshakes or whatever it is. You sell clothes. Nobody says, I wonder what the value of the business is at the close of trading today. But when we do it with the great corporations of the world, we need to know, and we think we're a total failure if, in fact, the price went down. When we really are looking at the value received. So if we're looking at this from an income perspective, I'm not sure you want to take that out of there either. Now, small, medium, large, your question, or bonds, it's all the above. It's not, let's go in small cap today. We don't want any mid cap or large. We don't want any international. We don't want any bonds. We want it all. I don't want any bonds right now, sorry. But we need to, if you're drawing income, some floating rate notes, maybe some high yield as kind of an alternative. It's all. So for building a portfolio for income, building a portfolio for growth in income someday, we're building a portfolio for growth. In other words, income a long ways away. We want it all. Now, let me take this step further because I have a feeling, Roy, you're asking this question. Where are the bargains in the world? Well, from my perspective, emerging markets particularly, small cap over larger, value over growth. But I really wouldn't say value over growth by a lot. That's more of a safety, right? That's just a precaution. Value doesn't move around as much. But when we're talking about it, particularly looking at emerging markets, yields are very high. Prices relative to earnings, growth rates, etc., are very, very low compared to the rest of the world. I would overweight those areas of the world. Okay? Roy, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And if we didn't fully answer your question, by golly, shoot back another email. Okay? All right, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, I do want and need your calls.
We've got a big segment left in today's program. I'd love to fill it up with phone calls. 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. 580-KIDO, that's our number. And if you have any comments, questions during the week, love to hear from you. And also, we've got podcasts there. That's at petsofinancial.com. So shoot over, you know, your little notes. Hey, we would like to talk about this, that, whatever. Love to hear from you. Also, we've got all our podcasts there. We've also got calculators and articles to help you with your own financial planning. All right, let's go ahead and quickly go to the phones and see how many we can get in here. We've got Phil. Phil, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. Hey,
hi, Dave.
I'm in retirement. Mm-hmm. Of the money that we have in an IRA, I take about 5% out a year, and it's about 50-50 between fixed and equities. But I think in the equities I've got, I'm too heavy in large cap, and I'm wondering if there are any guidelines on with that information on emerging markets or small cap, what kind of percentages I should have in mutual funds that fit that description.
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. You know, Phil, first of all, are you drawing income now? You are in retirement.
Yeah.
And taking income from this portfolio, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
About 5%.
Okay. So what we want to try to do is we have to be thinking larger cap typically, okay, because you do want to try to generate income. But there are dividend-paying smaller cap companies. So if you focus on some of those mutual funds that look for income, it won't be as high as the large caps, but you should be able to pick up some income. And although it doesn't sound like a lot, let's kind of think about this. So let me pretend you're taking 5% income. Is that what you said?
Uh-huh.
Fairly high. I hope you're aware of that.
Yeah,
and being careful.
That.
Okay.
I know that.
Okay. I think it's doable, by the way, Phil. But that's another story. Okay. It's doable, but you have to do it right. You have to be careful. Now, with 5%, then what I'm saying is, if you're getting 2, it doesn't sound like much, but you're getting 2%. We really only need to find 3% growth somewhere else, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
It really helps when you're looking at, I need full blown appreciation because I'm in a small cap growth fund. That's tough because it's very volatile. And if you're selling off your seed corn, your stocks, into a downturn, it's devastating. So we do need to be thinking about the reservoirs. We need to have backs up there, and we need to be replenishing them with what I call rainwater, right? With that's that 2% dividend. Now, you should be able to get three plus with some of the larger cap names, and especially then when we blend in foreign, they're going to be 4+. So we're getting closer to your full income need, and we really don't have to look for a lot to sell. And our reservoir.
You said blend in what, Dave?
International.
Oh, okay.
International dividend payers. And when you blend those in, international stocks pay a lot more. We talked about this a few weeks ago, where even countries like Australia have an average yield of 5 right now. Now, there's a lot of reasons to say, no, go, don't put it in Australia, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying these are examples of overseas. Don't chase them around. But you do have to be aware that overseas collectively has a higher yield, and that will help in our income piece. And then you can blend in.
Are they more volatile, though? Or?
What's that?
Are they more volatile, the overseas ones, so international?
Not necessarily. Again, when we take and put it in as part of the portfolio, it diminishes your volatility rather than increasing it.
Okay.
So think of it not as a singular component. Like, well, I don't know if I want any small cap growth. Yeah, you do, because putting a little piece of that in the portfolio overall does not increase your overall volatility. But it won't help you on the income side, so we want to keep that piece small. Okay.
Some small, like, you know, I don't
10%, 5%.
Yeah, overall, I think you want no, and you want a difference between growth and value or a blend.
Uh-huh.
And I think you want very little on the growth side because it doesn't generate income. You're now in an income mode. The objective becomes, how do I make sure that I do not outlive my income?
Right?
Right.
Right.
So
yeah.
That is our objective, not beating the S&P or the Russell 2000 or whatever index you arbitrarily throw up as your measuring stick. That's silly. Your measuring stick is, do I have income for life? Period.
Yeah.
So when you do that, you say, I need to focus on income. So I don't care if you go up to 10% if you find a good income-oriented small mid-cap fund. But when it comes to the growth side, keep it small. Because it's not helping you on the income piece, but that doesn't mean none. So you want to go 10% in the small cap, I'm okay, but focus mostly on earning some income or the value side. Mid cap, the same thing, add another 10, 15%. Take international up to 30%, but make sure it's global, not specific to Australia in our example here. Take it global. Let them generate income all over the world. That will predominantly be large cap as well. And when you take that and you blend in a little bit of, like today I say, high-yield bonds and maybe some floating-rate notes, part of your reservoir to help you generate your income, I think you have a better balance that way. But, yes, absolutely, you should have small, mid-cap in your portfolio because sometimes any particular sector is the only thing that's working. We sure found that in the late 90s when tech, overpriced, non-dividend-paying tech was the only thing that worked.
Right.
Nothing else
still
did. So
okay,
you had to end up selling off some of these appreciated stocks, even though it was a small piece of your portfolio. That's how you do it in retirement. So, okay?
Thank you very much.
You are welcome, Phil. Thanks for your call.
Yes,
bye-bye.
Right.
And let's take a quick see if Jim. Jim, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to make a quick thing about, you know, Frank and the chicken and the economy.
Yes, yes.
I learned a lot when I was a kid. From a Heckle and Jekyll comic book, you remember the two crows. And Heckle and Jekyll were two crows, and they had a garden. They grew beans. Their nemesis was a fox. And the fox came across this lamp with Aladdin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the fox wished for all the money in the world. So he got all the money in the world. Nobody else had any money. So the world got together and decreed that beans would be the currency. So I learned that as a kid. So
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Take care.
Good. Thank you.
Weekend.
Have a good day. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's good. That's good. Hey, we're going to talk about this next week because we've got only a minute left in today's program. But I wanted to kind of give a – Joe, thanks for the heads up here. I've got some new money coming in soon. It's taxable and long-term money. Should I put it in the market now or put 30% in now, 30% in 3 months, or what do you suggest? Yes, that's what I suggest. Now, here's the thing. You have to be aware of your own risk tolerance, okay? How are you going to feel if you put it all in? Because studies show putting it all in whenever you have it has been the best return. It's also the most volatile. So if we're talking about, since it is long-term money, absolutely. Let's get a third, maybe even a half in there. And instead of looking at it from a time perspective, let's put a time frame on it, yes. 3 months, you put in 10% more every month, whatever you want to do that forces you to do it. But then also, if you do get a market correction, double up. Meaning, instead of I'm going to put 10% in now, I'm putting in 20 or 30 or what have you. Everybody have a great weekend. Go Broncos. We'll talk to you next week.